Welcome to our deep dive into the Book of Psalms. I bet you think you know these 150 poems.
Oh, yeah.
But we are going way beyond skimming the surface today.
Much deeper.
We're going to uncover how they fit together.
Like puzzle pieces.
As a book. How they were likely used and what that means for us.
You and me.
As readers. Thousands of years later.
Right.
We've got some incredible insights from Dr. Fred Putnam.
Oh, he's a brilliant scholar.
A Hebrew and Old Testament scholar.
Yes.
He's going to walk us through some seriously mind-blowing stuff.
Like what?
Like why those little titles above each psalm matter more than you think.
Oh, I always skip those.
And how the book takes us on a journey.
Ooh, where are we going?
From desperation to hope.
I like that destination.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
First things first. What is the Book of Psalms?
It's more than just a collection of poems, right?
Beyond just a collection of poems.
Yes. The Book of Psalms is actually five books within a book.
Oh.
All thoughtfully structured.
Okay.
The Hebrew title, Tehillim, means praises.
It hints at its core focus. Worshiping God and reflecting on God's actions in the world.
So it's like a mix of speaking to God.
Yes.
And speaking about God.
Exactly.
Okay.
About 60% are prayers directed to God.
Okay.
Well, the other 40%.
The rest.
Are more like reflections or meditations about God and our relationship with him.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Now, I've always been curious about those little titles above each psalm.
Like what?
Like a Psalm of David.
Oh,
I'll be honest, I usually just skip over those.
Oh, yeah, me too.
But Dr. Putnam says they're actually super important.
Really?
They're key to understanding the book structure.
Oh, interesting.
While they're often translated as of David.
Right.
The original Hebrew implies a broader connection.
And just simply authorship.
Than simply authorship.
So some were likely written by David.
Okay.
Others might be dedicated to him.
Okay.
Or written in his style.
Oh, wow.
Dr. Putnam uses the phrase ascribed to David.
Yeah, yeah.
To capture that nuance. So it's like those titles give us clues about the psalm's origins.
Right.
Or purpose, even if we don't always know the exact author.
Exactly.
I'm starting to see how these details matter.
I know, right?
But is there evidence that the order of these psalms is intentional? Or were they just kind of thrown together?
No, there's strong evidence that the arrangement of the psalms is very intentional.
Okay.
Each of the five books has a distinct authorship pattern.
Like different.
Book one is heavily associated with David.
Okay.
While books two and three feature the sons of Korah and Asaph.
Who are they?
These important musical figures.
Oh, so it's almost like different composers.
Yeah.
Contributing to a concept album, each with their own style and focus.
That's a great analogy. And it gets even more intriguing when you notice that the number of anonymous psalms increases as the book progresses.
Anonymous psalms. Okay, so like...
I don't know who wrote them.
We don't know who wrote them, and there are more of them toward the end.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, now this is where it gets really interesting. What the names used for God also change throughout the book.
Uh-huh.
Yahweh is prominent in the early and later sections, with Elohim more common in the middle.
Yeah.
Is that significant?
Scholars are still debating the exact reasons for these shifts.
Okay.
But they definitely add another layer of complexity to the book's structure.
Okay.
Some believe it reflects different periods of composition.
Okay.
While others see it as a deliberate theological choice, highlighting different aspects of God's character.
Wow. It's like discovering hidden messages encoded in the book.
It really is.
So we've got these five books... Different authors, shifting names for God.
Right.
It's starting to feel more like a symphony than a random song collection.
That's a great way to think about it. And like a symphony, the Psalms have an emotional arc.
An emotional arc.
That unfolds as you journey through the book.
You're saying the book takes us on an emotional journey.
Absolutely.
Tell me more about that.
It starts with a focus on petitionary prayers in the first three books.
Okay, so like...
Those raw, desperate cries for help in times of trouble.
Okay.
But as you move into the final two books, the tone shifts.
It changes.
Towards praise and thanksgiving.
So it's like the book starts in a valley of despair.
Yes.
And gradually climbs towards a mountaintop of hope and gratitude.
A beautiful image.
Does that reflect the experience of individual psalms too?
Many individual psalms also mirror this arc,
yeah.
Beginning in darkness and ending in light.
Do you have a favorite example of a psalm that does that?
Psalm 18 is a classic example.
Okay, tell me about it.
It begins with vivid descriptions of fear and distress.
Oh, no.
The cords of death encompassed me. The torrents of ungodliness terrified me.
Wow, that's heavy.
But by the end,
oh, my heavens,
the psalmist declares, "The Lord lives. Blessed be my rock. Exalted be the God of my salvation."
Wow. Talk about an emotional roller coaster.
It is.
So reading the songs in order, we're not just bouncing around randomly between different feelings. Right. We're being intentionally guided on a path.
From lament to celebration.
From lament to celebration. It makes me want to go back and reread them all in order right now.
You should.
But hold on. We've talked about how they were arranged.
Right.
But how were the Psalms actually USED in ancient Israel? What would it have been like to experience them back then?
It's tempting to think of it like how we might read them today.
Quietly.
In quiet personal reflection.
Right.
But the Psalms were likely much more dynamic and communal.
Really?
They're often called the prayer book or hymnal of Israel.
Oh.
Suggesting a more active and public use.
So picture people singing these together.
Yes.
Chanting them in unison.
We do get some clues about that.
Oh, where?
1 Chronicles 16 describes David instructing musicians to sing a song compiled from verses of various psalms.
Really? So they were kind of creating these musical mashups.
Yes.
Drawing from different psalms.
To express the emotions of the moment.
So maybe they weren't just reading these words. They were embodying them, experiencing them together through music and song.
It adds another dimension.
I would certainly add another dimension to their power.
It's fascinating.
It's like we can almost hear those echoes across the centuries, right?
Yes, the Psalms connect us to that ancient wellspring of faith.
It gives me chills. But before we get too carried away, Dr. Putnam has a word of caution for us modern readers.
Oh, what is it?
He says we need to be careful about making assumptions about how the songs were used based on how they're categorized today.
Like those categories we use, like penitential psalms or pilgrim psalms.
Right.
He's right to highlight that.
Okay.
Just because we might label some as penitential psalms or pilgrim psalms.
Doesn't mean
they were always understood or used that way in ancient Israel.
So, like, we can't just assume Psalm 51 was only ever used for confession after someone messed up.
Exactly.
There might be other ways those words resonated with people.
Exactly. Those labels can be helpful starting points.
Okay.
But we need to approach them with healthy skepticism.
Okay. And remember to go back to the text itself.
Mm-hmm.
And try to understand it within its historical context.
That's such an important reminder. Context is key.
It is.
We can't just impose our modern interpretations on these ancient texts.
No.
Without considering how they might have been understood
right.
in their original setting.
It's like trying to understand a joke from another culture.
Yeah. Okay.
You need to know the cultural references and nuances to really get it.
That's a perfect analogy. Okay. So we've talked about structure, authorship, emotional arcs,
right.
and even debunked some common assumptions.
Yeah.
What I'm really curious about is, what's the deeper message?
The core takeaway.
Yeah, the core takeaway from reading the Psalms as a unified book.
It all comes together.
What are they ultimately trying to tell us?
They reveal a powerful message about God's faithfulness and the ultimate trajectory of his plan, even in the face of suffering and doubt.
It's like seeing the forest instead of just focusing on individual trees, right? Precisely.
That movement from petition to praise reminds us that God hears our cries and acts on our behalf.
Even when we don't see it in the moment.
And that offers incredible hope and encouragement, especially when we find ourselves in those dark valleys ourselves.
Absolutely.
I love it. It's like the book is reminding us.
That even when we feel lost and alone,
God is still at work.
Orchestrating a bigger story.
That we're a part of.
The Psalms give us permission to bring all of ourselves to God.
All of ourselves, like the good and the bad.
The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Knowing that he's big enough to handle it.
Absolutely.
That's so encouraging. This has been mind-blowing.
I know, right?
I feel like we've only just scratched the surface, though.
Oh, we've just begun.
There's so much more to explore in this book.
There is a lot more. Welcome back to our deep dive into the Psalms.
I'm so excited to keep exploring this ancient playlist. Last time we were talking about how the Psalms are arranged.
Oh, yeah, like a roadmap.
To take us on a journey from petition to praise.
Right, like a map guiding us through a range of human emotions.
But how were the Psalms actually USED in ancient Israel?
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah, what would it have been like to experience them back then?
Well, it's a question scholars are still piecing together.
Okay.
We know they were more than just words on a page.
Mm-hmm.
The Psalms are often referred to as the prayer book or hymnal of Israel,
okay.
suggesting a more active and communal use.
So not just like quiet reading.
Not just that.
More like...
It's like trying to imagine a world without sheet music.
Oh, wow.
Where songs are passed down through generations by singing them together.
Oh.
Feeling the rhythm and the emotion collectively.
You know, there's a certain power in communal experience, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It's like going to a concert.
Yes.
You feel the energy of the music and the people around you.
Right.
And it becomes so much more than just listening to the notes.
Exactly. And while we don't have a complete picture
of how the songs were used.
Yeah. Do we have any clues?
We do get glimpses. Where?
Remember that passage in 1 Chronicles 16
mm-hmm.
where David instructs musicians to sing a song made up of verses from several psalms?
Yeah, that always struck me as really interesting.
Like they were creating these musical mashups.
Yeah.
Drawing from different psalms to express the emotions of the moment.
But do we know if they had specific psalms for specific occasions?
Like we might choose a song for a wedding or a funeral today.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's where things get a bit murky.
Okay.
We might assume so, but the biblical text doesn't offer clear evidence.
For those kinds of liturgical uses.
Right. Later Jewish and Christian traditions developed elaborate systems.
Like rules.
Yes. Rules for assigning psalms to different events, but those are interpretations added on much later.
So it's kind of like those mood playlists on music streaming services.
Yeah.
We impose our own categories and interpretations.
Right.
But the psalms themselves
can be experienced in so many different ways.
Depending on the listener.
Precisely. The psalms are rich and multi-layered. I'm starting to see how approaching the psalms as a unified book can actually deepen our appreciation for each individual psalm.
It's like knowing the overarching story of a TV series before diving into a specific episode.
Ah, okay.
The individual moments have more weight and meaning.
Because you understand the larger context.
Exactly.
It's making me want to go back and reread them all in order.
You should. It's like a literary marathon.
But let's shift gears a bit and talk about the language of the psalms.
Okay.
I mean, these are poems, right?
They are poems.
So we can't just read them like a news report.
No, there's so much more to them.
What are some of the key things that make the language of the psalms so powerful?
The psalms are full of literary devices.
Like what?
Metaphors, imagery, parallelism.
Designed to.
All designed to evoke emotion and create a deeper, more visceral experience for the reader.
Okay, break that down for me.
Sure.
What's a good example of metaphor in the Psalms?
Well, there's the classic, "The Lord is my shepherd."
I love that one.
It immediately conjures up an image.
Protection.
Of protection, guidance, and provision, even if you've never set foot on a sheep farm.
It makes God's care feel so personal and tangible.
Exactly. Metaphor allows us to grasp abstract concepts through familiar, concrete images.
What about parallelism? What does that look like?
One type you'll find is called synonymous parallelism.
Yeah.
Where the second line basically repeats the first line's idea, but in different words.
Give me an example.
Like, "The Lord is gracious and merciful, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love."
Okay.
The repetition reinforces the message.
That makes it stick.
It makes it stick in your mind.
But wasn't there another type of parallelism?
Yes.
One where the lines contracted with each other?
Yes. That's called antithetical parallelism.
Okay.
The second line presents a contrasting idea to the first.
Like a?
Like in Proverbs 10.4. "A slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich."
It's almost like those ancient proverbs.
Precisely. And this type of parallelism highlights the consequences of choices and underscores the importance of living a righteous life.
This is making me think differently about how I read the Psalms.
It changes everything.
It's not just about understanding the literal meaning of the words.
Right.
It's about feeling the weight of them, noticing how they're structured.
And the sounds and repetitions create a deeper impact.
That's a great observation.
The psalmists also use vivid imagery to create a multi-sensory experience for the reader.
Like what kind of imagery are we talking about?
We see images of nature, mountains, valleys, storms, sunshine.
Okay.
Images of war, swords, shields, arrows, chariots.
Anything else?
And images of everyday life, farming, shepherding, building, traveling.
It's like they were pulling from their entire world to create these poems.
Bringing the reader right into the heart of the experience.
Okay, but let's be honest, not everyone is a poetry expert.
Right.
Why should we care about all these fancy literary techniques?
How does it affect how we experience the Psalms today?
Yeah.
That's a great question. Understanding these techniques isn't just an academic exercise. It's about unlocking a deeper level of meaning and emotional connection.
Okay, so it actually makes a difference.
It's like the difference between reading a play and actually seeing it performed on stage.
Right.
You experience the emotions, the nuances,
the full impact.
The full impact of the story in a whole new way.
That is a perfect analogy.
The literary features of the songs are like stage directions for the soul.
Guiding us.
Guiding us to a deeper understanding of the text.
So it's not just about understanding the words intellectually.
No.
It's about letting them wash over us. Feeling their power.
And letting them speak to us on a deeper level.
Exactly. And when we do that, we open ourselves to the transformative power of these ancient poems.
It can be life-changing.
This is incredible. I feel like I'm just starting to grasp the true artistry of the Psalms.
There's always more to discover.
But we've been focusing a lot on the positive aspects. The praise, the hope, the beauty.
Right.
What about the Psalms that express darker emotions?
Like anger, doubt, despair.
Yeah, how do those fit into this journey from petition to praise?
That's such an important question.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that.
The Psalms don't shy away from the difficult realities of human existence.
So they're real.
They're real.
In fact, they give us permission to be real with God.
Yes.
To bring our whole selves to Him, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Absolutely.
That's a relief, to be honest.
Sometimes I feel like I have to put on a happy face when I talk to God.
Yes, exactly.
Like, I can't let him see my doubts or my anger.
But the Psalms seem to say, no, bring it all. He can handle it.
Exactly. And by acknowledging those darker emotions, by wrestling with them honestly before God,
we can actually move.
We can actually move towards a place of healing and hope.
So it's not about ignoring those feelings.
Or pretending they don't exist.
It's about bringing them into the light.
Letting God work through them.
The Psalms model that process for us.
They do.
They show us how to lament.
How to question.
How to wrestle with God.
And ultimately, how to find hope and trust, even in the midst of darkness.
This is so powerful. It's like the Psalms are giving us a roadmap for navigating the full spectrum of human emotion without sugarcoating the hard stuff.
Exactly. They remind us that we are not alone in our struggles.
They give voice.
They give voice to the deepest longings and anxieties of the human heart.
While also pointing us towards the one.
Who can ultimately meet those needs.
This has given me a whole new perspective on the Psalms. But there's still so much to explore.
There is, and we'll delve even deeper in part 3.
Oh, what are we going to talk about next?
We'll unpack what all of this means for us today.
Ooh.
And how these ancient poems can speak to the challenges and joys we face in our modern lives.
Welcome back to the final part of our deep dive into the Psalms.
It's amazing how much depth we've uncovered.
I know, right? It's like we've been on this incredible journey, exploring everything from the book's structure and historical context,
right,
to its emotional depth and literary artistry.
And now?
Now what?
It's time to bring it all home, to connect these ancient words to our modern lives,
mm-hmm,
and discover how they can speak to the challenges and joys we face today.
I'm so ready for this. Last time we were talking about the raw honesty of the Psalms.
Yes.
How they don't shy away from difficult emotions, like anger, doubt, and despair.
Right.
I have to admit, that was a bit of an aha moment for me. I'd always felt like I had to have it all together when I came to God.
Yeah.
But the songs show us a different way.
It's refreshing, isn't it?
It is.
To see that faith isn't about pretending everything is perfect.
Right.
But about bringing our whole selves to God.
Messy bits and all.
Messy bits and all.
Absolutely. But it's one thing to acknowledge those darker emotions.
Yeah.
It's another to actually know how to deal with them.
Mm.
The Psalms give us permission to be real.
Right.
But do they offer any guidance on how to move from those difficult feelings to a place of healing and hope?
They absolutely do.
Oh.
They provide a framework for processing those emotions in a healthy way. And yeah. It often starts with lament. The Psalms show us that it's okay to pour out our hearts to God, to express our pain,
yeah,
our confusion, our anger.
Without holding back.
Without holding back.
It's like those moments when you just need a good cry.
Yes.
To let it all out before you can start to make sense of things.
Lament is like creating space for healing to begin.
Okay.
It's acknowledging the hurt, the brokenness.
The things that feel unfair.
The things that feel unfair. And the Psalms give us a language for doing that.
Okay.
For voicing our pain to God in a way that feels both honest and reverent.
But we can't just stay stuck in lament forever, right?
Right. At some point.
We need to move forward.
We need to find a way to move forward.
So how do we do that?
That's where the Psalms guide us towards a deeper understanding of God's character and his purposes.
Okay.
As we lament, as we wrestle with God,
we start to see.
We begin to see glimpses of his faithfulness, his love, his sovereignty.
And those glimpses can offer hope.
A glimmer of hope? A sense that even in the midst of darkness, we are not alone?
It's like those moments when you're hiking through a dense forest.
Yeah.
And suddenly you come to a clearing and catch a glimpse of the sun breaking through the trees.
Yes. And those glimpses can help us shift our perspective.
To move from a place of despair to a place of trust.
Exactly. The Psalms remind us that even when we don't understand what's happening,
even when we feel lost and alone,
God is still at work orchestrating a bigger story that we're a part of.
It's like realizing that the messy, chaotic parts of our lives might actually be part of a larger tapestry.
A work of art.
That's still being woven.
Exactly. And the Psalms help us see that God is the ultimate artist.
And he can use even our pain and brokenness for good.
They show us that even in the darkest moments, we can choose to cling to God.
Trust in his goodness, even when we don't understand his ways.
That's a powerful message of hope.
It's like the Psalms are saying, yes, life is hard. There will be suffering. But even in the midst of it all, God is with you. He sees you. He cares.
And that knowledge.
That unwavering belief.
That unwavering belief in God's presence and love.
Can sustain us through even the most difficult trials.
It's powerful.
I'm starting to see how the Psalms aren't just ancient poems.
They're tools for living.
A guidebook for navigating the ups and downs of life.
They give us a language for talking to God.
About the things that really matter. The things that keep us up at night.
And they're not just about talking to God.
But also.
They're about listening to him as well. They invite us to slow down, to pay attention.
To open ourselves to.
To open ourselves to the whispers of his wisdom and grace.
That's so important in our fast-paced, noisy world. The Psalms remind us to make space for silence.
For reflection.
For connection.
For connection with something bigger than ourselves.
And that connection can be profoundly transformative.
It can change the way we see the world.
The way we see ourselves and the way we relate to others.
Our relationships change.
This has been an incredible deep dive.
I've loved exploring this with you.
I feel like I've gained a whole new understanding of the Psalms. They're not just beautiful poetry. They're a source of strength and guidance for our everyday lives.
And they're a reminder that we're part of a long tradition of faith.
A community of believers.
Who have wrestled with the same questions and doubts.
And found hope in the midst of them.
That's the key, isn't it?
So, as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the one thing you hope our listeners will take away from this conversation?
I hope they'll be inspired to rediscover the Psalms.
To approach them.
To approach them with fresh eyes and open hearts.
Don't be afraid to wrestle with the difficult passages.
To find your own meaning in the metaphors and imagery. Let these ancient words speak to your soul and allow them to draw you closer to the heart of God.
Beautifully said.
Yeah.
And remember, this is just the beginning of your journey with the Psalms.
There's a lifetime of wisdom and beauty to uncover.
So keep exploring, keep digging, keep diving deep.
And don't forget to share your discoveries with us. Let us know what you're learning, what's resonating with you, what challenges you.
We'd love to hear your own deep dives into the Psalms.
Until next time.
Happy diving.